Empty Set Entertainment presents Slay, created by Scott Sigler and Rob Otto, performed by Scott Sigler. This story is intended for mature audiences only. Listener discretion is advised. Good morning, junkie, or good afternoon, or good evening. You know the drill, whatever the hell you're listening to this. How is your face? I hope it is great. Slay Book 1 is out May 1st, 2024. It's Slay Day! Order links at scottsigler.com/slay. Now, since I don't know when you will hear this, if you go there and you don't see links for the print and audible versions, don't have a coronary, we'll have those there soon. If you really want to know when those versions hit stores, sign up for my SMS list, and I will text that great face of yours I mentioned earlier. Text SIGTEXT, that's SIGTEXT, one word, to 855-955-5095 to join up. 855-955-5095. We text about new books, live streams, stuff like that. Simple and easy. We just finished re-recording the Slay Book 1 audiobook for Audible, and let me tell you, oh my God, it sounds so good. It sounds so good. Yes, you may have listened to Slay Season 1 podcast, and that was fine, but this new recording, it's like me wiggling my big bald head straight down your ear canal. It's fantastic. A lot of people are telling me it's incredible. It's the club championship of audiobooks. I don't know. That's just what I hear. Yes, a full-length, unabridged audiobook narrated by me. So get the ebook, get the audiobook to hear my luscious narration, and what the hell, get the print book to show people you got books on your shelf because you're very smart. Alrighty, let's sharpen them swords and focus on Slay Season 2. Let me get you caught up on the story so far. Then we're all gonna go gank some sweats. Previously on Slay. Kellius Droman found out where Teddy Two Fingers had been hiding. Lincoln demanded to go with Droman to whoop some ass, but Droman refused to take Lincoln with. Instead, he ordered Lincoln to go to his mansion to protect his daughter, Delilah. Already distraught after seeing his son, Sam, on the shelf, Lincoln grew despondent. As Droman magicked away to battle Teddy, Lincoln gave up. He downed a bottle of Jack Daniels and headed for the mansion. Billy, feeling terrible for his friend, tagged along to give Lincoln moral support. And now, episode 56 of Slay. Transiting was getting easier for Billy. His belly was only slightly queasy, and he didn't feel an urgent need to drop a deuce. He would not complete the trifecta this day. As for Link, though, Billy wasn't so sure. Definitely in danger of puking, by the looks of him. Downing an entire bottle of JD would do that to you. The blinding white turned whiter, the indiscernible black turned blacker, and then they were out. A small room, 5 feet by 5 feet, white plaster walls, half covered by ivy tendrils. A wood door with brass trim and an ornate brass handle. In the room's center, a marble bust of a bald dude with a long beard. On the bust's base, the name Euclid. "Where are we?" Billy asked. "Is this Droman's?" The door opened. Morgan Stone stood there, her kung fu clothes powder blue with black cuffs and trim. One hand held a tall wooden shaft topped by a long blade. The point atop it curved slightly. "William," Morgan said, "what are you doing here?" Lincoln pushed past her. "Delilah in her room?" He kept walking. "That man is problematic," Morgan said. "Again, William, what are you doing here?" She glared at him. Or was it he glared at him? Billy wasn't sure. Whichever. "Link, he had a real bad day," Billy said. "I'm keeping him company is all." Morgan again looked at Lincoln, who was walking through a narrow space that wound between big potted plants, racks of scrolls, and tables heaped with sculptures, artifacts, jewelry, and the like. On some of them, Billy saw filaments and threads, wriggling and glowing. "I don't have time for this," Morgan said. "I have to go. You keep Lincoln company while he watches Delilah. Don't touch anything. Don't snoop. In short, don't do anything that might, in the least possible way, anger Mr. Droman. Got it?" Billy nodded.
"Yeah, I got it. I hear you loud and clear. Going to help Droman fight Teddy Two Fingers?"
"What I do is not your concern," Morgan said. She, or he, stepped into the small room and placed a hand atop the head of Euclid. The door swung shut. When it closed, Billy saw that it was covered with ivy, just as the wall around it. Just like that, he couldn't see the door at all, but he could see the shimmer of meshwork within the leaves and the stems. Billy looked to Link just as he left Droman's plant-choked library, or study, or workshop, or whatever this botanical curio shop was. What if he'd gone out a door that would shut behind him, then be hidden with ivy?
"Hey, Link, wait up!"
Eyes closed, her head back, a low hum emanating from her throat, Hymana sat in the lotus position. Dozens of fat hornets flew in a slow circle around her head, weaving over and under her cornrow tails, which floated in the air like seaweed buoyed by a light current. Teddy could barely make out the fading tattoos on her neck and sternum. Hymana liked the dark. So, too, did Agnetha, who stayed close to the stone walls, almost completely hidden in shadow. She'd been doing that more and more since Hymana fixed her arm. Agnetha was self-conscious. Teddy understood why she felt that way, although he didn't really care. As long as she could fight, that's all he needed. And now, she could fight far better than she could before. Hymana's green-gray eyes popped open.
"Droman is coming for us," she said. "He's on the move, and he's bursting with power."
The lust in her voice, a sadist's lust to inflict pain.
"You need to let go your hatred for Droman," Teddy said. "Emotions like that cloud judgment. They're bad for business."
In the deep shadows, Agnetha shifted.
"You're a fine one to talk," she said. "Are you going to let go of your hatred for Franks?"
Her voice had a buzz to it, like a beehive that had just been poked with a stick.
"That's different," Teddy said.
Agnetha chuckled.
"Sure it is. I don't blame you, Teddy. I want him too."
In truth, Teddy's desire to hurt Franks wasn't all that different from Agnetha's, or from Hymana's desire to inflict pain on Droman. If things went well, they'd all be happy soon.
"We can debate our varying desires later," Teddy said. "First, we have to deal with Droman. Hymana, how far out is he?"
She closed her eyes again, started moaning again. Teddy wished she made a sound other than the one she made. Intentional or not, that moan was a siren song calling to him to wash up on her insect-infested rocks. No matter how sexy she looked or sounded, he would never satisfy that particular temptation. Droman had been hunting them for days. He'd had no success in finding them, at least until now. The plant mage should have been more careful. Sometimes, getting what you want carried a powerful price. Hymana's eyes popped open again.
"Perhaps an hour," she said. "My shield mesh is superior to his probes. He does not know. I know he's coming."
1 hour. Not long at all.
"Let's prepare," Teddy said. "Agnetha, make sure Amethysta and her Thuengols are ready with their new toys."
Billy couldn't believe his eyes.
Link, for real? This is Drummond's house? This ain't like a museum or something?
He'd followed Link up some awesome marble stairs, out into a walled garden with a big-ass marble fountain straight out of The Godfather and fruit trees full of fruit that wasn't even in season. They'd followed a marble walkway that led from the fountain to the mansion, 20-foot-tall conical shrub-looking things lining each side. Lincoln said they were arborvitae, whatever the hell that was. They were charmed, and they were not to be touched. Billy could believe it. He'd seen Droman's green thumb magic up close. The inside of the mansion was like nothing Billy had seen outside of movies and TV. Sculptures and paintings, golden drapes, and dark wood wainscoting. Even the ceiling was a work of art, a fresco, if Billy had the term right, that showed plants and trees from around the world. He'd followed Link past a ballroom, a huge library, a room that might have been a living room but was bigger than Grandma's entire apartment, and a dining room with a table that could easily seat 30 people. Then, up two sets of mahogany stairs to another floor that looked like the set of a Streets to Impossible Riches rap video. Had to be real different growing up in a place like this. Lincoln walked down the hall without talking, his tattered cloak flowing behind him like Darth Vader's cape. Dude was mad. Of that, there was no doubt. What was this big-ass mansion worth? $10 million? $20 million? Billy had no idea.
Link, this place is tight, Billy said. You gotta admit, this beats transiting out of nasty-ass bathrooms by a country mile.
The hallway's doors were white, save for the one at the end, which was pink. That door opened. Delilah Droman stood there in jeans and a pink hoodie with the word Celine across the chest in white.
Hey, Link.
She looked past Link, saw Billy, and her already bright smile blazed even brighter.
Hey, Walt. I didn't know you were coming. This is fantastic. Can I call you Billy now?
Link barely slowed. He raised his hand as he walked by, traded a fist bump with Delilah, and went through the door. Well, at least he hadn't found a bar and raided it.
Hey, Delilah, Billy said. Yeah, you can call me Billy.
He offered her a fist bump. She obliged.
How have I been?
She rolled her eyes.
I've been here. I know. Nice house, right? But a gilded cage is still a cage.
Billy remembered how he'd felt when he'd first been at the old stone church. When Dante, Oleus Oakbeard, the Flechette sisters, and Boss Hogg had been out for his head. Lincoln, Magda, and Ariella hadn't let him leave the church, not even to see Grandma. They hadn't even let him call Grandma. Sure, it had been for his own safety, but that hadn't made it any less frustrating.
I know, he said. I've been there. Does it make me sound like one of the olds if I say it's for the best?
She squinted at him.
Yes, it does, Boomer. But you're here, so maybe it won't be as bad today. Do you tell better jokes than Lincoln?
Kid, everyone tells better jokes than Lincoln. She laughed.
You're off to a good start.
He just called her Kid. The same thing Link and Magda called him. They were older than he was, while he was older than Delilah. Using the word felt right. Did that mean he wasn't a kid anymore? Maybe.
Do you like video games? Delilah asked. Love them. Haven't played in a while, though.
Delilah grabbed his hand.
Come on, I'll shoot you in the face, like dozens of times.
Girl, you don't even know my skills. I'ma trash you. At that minor bit of shit talk, she lit up even more. Delilah seemed to cheer Lincoln up no matter what was going on. Billy saw why. Delilah Droman was kind of awesome.
I'll give you a tour of my rooms, she said. Then we'll play.
Did you say rooms, as in more than one? She tugged his arm, leading him through the door.
This is my sitting room, she said. I like pink.
Pink couch, pink chair, pink carpet. This room alone was four times the size of his room at the old stone church.
Check out my view, Delilah said.
She led him to the room's single big window. It overlooked the grounds Billy had just walked through. Fruit trees, the marble walkway lined with tall arborvitae, the fountain gurgling water into the air, and the white concrete wall topped by a black wrought iron fence that marked the property's end.
That's all the outside I get, Delilah said. I haven't left this house since the attack.
Billy let out a grunt.
Poor baby. Should I call CPS on your pops?
She punched his shoulder.
Don't be so salty, Billy. Oh, come look at my second walk-in closet. We just had it redone.
Yep, growing up in a place like this had to be real, real different.
Lead the way, kid, Billy said. Lead the way.
In the climate-ravaged world of 2072, the city of Pura stands as a miraculous green haven. Pura is a geoengineered paradise that protects its fortunate residents from the global catastrophes of heat domes, fires, floods, and droughts. In a time when the world outside is unsafe, it's vital for Pura's existence that people rally behind the purpose of the city, and Demetria Lopez, head of the city's public relations, tirelessly promotes its idyllic image. But when she stumbles on a dark secret that, if exposed, would be the downfall of Pura's existence, she must decide who and what she's willing to protect. From Wondery, the makers of Academy and Dr. Death, The Last City stars actors Ray Seahorn, Jeannie Tirado, and Maury Sterling. Follow The Last City on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can binge all episodes of The Last City early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus. As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm.
Lincoln lay on the couch, his feet on one armrest, his head on the other, the haze of Cimarol over his eyes to block out the lights.
My guy, the turtle coin is a buff, Delilah said. You get one and we can wombo combo these sweats.
Good, Billy said. I'm playing like a damn bot. I want to gank these squeakers.
The two were at Delilah's fancy desk, playing a video game. Lincoln had no idea what they were saying. It was sort of English, sort of not. He had heard ancient, long-dead languages that made more sense. The haze of Cimarol could block out the light, but it did nothing to dull Billy and Delilah's chatter or the strange noises of the game itself. Why would anyone play something that sounded so annoying? Wasn't really that loud, though. Let him play. Lincoln wasn't interested. His buzz was distracting enough. Pretty soon, he'd have to get up and find Droman's liquor stash. Somewhere in this small nation disguised as a house, the guy undoubtedly had good stuff. Had expensive stuff.
This fool is a bullet sponge, Delilah said. Just cheese him with that unicorn blast.
Copy that, Billy said. Commencing the cheesery. If they kept up that gibberish, they might accidentally cast a spell. When Lovecraft had been in a Jurator training at the Bastion, he'd accidentally conjured up all kinds of weird shit. Or so the story went. Would Sam like this game? Probably. Kids did what kids did. Lincoln's son would soon be 12. He'd been 6 when Teddy took him. Lincoln had missed half of his life, missed half of what kids did. Fucking Droman. Was he tearing Teddy apart at that very moment, wrapping him up in thorny vines, sending brambles through his balls, nettles through his nuts? If Teddy died, did any hope of getting Sam off the shelf die with him? The video game sound stopped suddenly.
Billy, Delilah said, do you hear that noise?
Lincoln sat up. He heard something, too.
No, Billy said. What's it sound like?
Like a buzz, she said. Like big bugs. I think it's coming from outside.
That kimono-wearing bug lady bitch. Was Teddy making another try for Delilah? Lincoln stood, or rather, he tried to. He lost his balance for a moment, dropped back down on the couch. The booze. He focused, stood quickly, rushed out of the computer room into Delilah's sitting room, to the window that overlooked the walled garden. The ground lights lit up the marble fountain, the marble walkway that led to it, and the tall arborvitae lining both sides of the walkway. He didn't see anything. There, in the air, passing a good 15 feet above the white wall, was that a drone? Black, 8 arms spreading out from a central hub, their rotors blurry circles, 2 T-shaped landing legs sticking down at sharp angles. Under the central hub, something that stuck out like the barrel of a long rifle. This was not good. He saw more drones, a dozen of them, whizzing in above the wall's black fence and spreading out across the grounds. The tall, charmed arborvitae started to move, to waver, to stretch toward the drones. The lead drone's rifle barrel spit out a long tongue of flame that sank into the reaching arborvitae, splashing against its trunk, spraying out onto the tight green fronds. Fire shot upward as the tree reared back, wriggling and flailing, flames spreading up and out and down. Jets of flame shot out from the other drones, poured into other arborvitae, into fruit trees, into bushes. In a span of 3 seconds, a dozen thrashing trees blazed with hungry, feasting fire that lit up the dark night. The trees writhed in what seemed like agony, but some of them fought back, slapping hard against the drones, smashing them out of the air to the grounds below. Some of the drones whizzed past the flaming trees and shot toward the mansion. Lincoln reached into his cloak and found his S&W MP12 shotgun. He used the butt to smash the window open, sending glass scattering down, then leaned out, sighted, and fired at an incoming drone. He missed. He'd loaded slugs, not shot. 3 drones zipped closer, backlit by arborvitae that writhed like giant living torches. Lincoln sighted in, fired again. A drone spun and dropped like a rock. The other 2 sailed overhead, out of sight. He heard a whoosh of flame, and at the same time, the splash of liquid hitting the roof. Lincoln turned to run back to the computer room, only to see Delilah in the sitting room doorway, fear on her face, Billy standing right behind her, his hands protectively on her shoulders. Delilah, Lincoln said. Do you know if your dad has fire protection spells on the house? His own words played back in his head as if they'd been recorded. Do you know if your dad has fire projection spells on this house? He was slurring his words. Her eyes narrowed in anxious confusion, then she glanced past him to the window. Fire protection? She shook her head. I don't know. Maybe? Lincoln heard the slightest tinkle of breaking glass. He turned to see a drone at the window, barrel poking through, pointing his way. It happened in fractions of seconds. He saw the fire fluid gush from the barrel, straight at his face. The flame curled left, around him, singeing him with heat, but not burning him. Curled around him, straight into Billy's outstretched hands. Billy filled with fire, glowed as if he were glass containing pure plasma. Delilah cried out, lurched away from him, her sweatshirt ablaze. Lincoln caught her, wrapped his cloak around her, smothering the flames in an instant. With her still beneath his cloak, he turned enough to point his shotgun at the drone and fired. The slug punched through plastic and metal. The drone dropped from sight. A giant 8-foot-long winged centipede flew through the window, then another, arcing into the room like pythons with 100 legs and 100 tiny, buzzing wings, their wicked pincers snapping and dripping with poison. One came at Lincoln. He jammed the shotgun between the pincers and fired. The slug exited somewhere halfway down its body in a splatter of purple muck. The beast fell to the pink carpet, curling and twisting upon itself. The second one came at him, too fast for Lincoln to stop. A curl of flame shot from Billy's hand like a burning whip, catching the centipede in midair. Its 100 little wings blackened and crisped. It dropped to the carpet, fully ablaze, writhing as black smoke poured off it, roiling up to the ceiling. The window frame and the walls around it smashed inward as a big body punched through, a body dressed in camel fatigues and wearing a steel breastplate. She landed in a crouch. Agnetha stood, malice in her eyes and a wicked grin curling her lip. Where her forearm had been, the forearm Lincoln had chopped off, now curled a yellow and purple centipede as thick as Lincoln's leg. Hello, Franks, Agnetha said. Say hello to my little friend. She thrust her arm forward. The centipede shot toward Lincoln like the tongue of a giant frog. He instinctively raised an arm. The centipede smashed into him like a battering ram, knocking him back and sending him tumbling over the pink couch. He rolled to his feet, his hand reaching into his cloak for Tizona. The centipede arm snapped back to Agnetha, a living bungee cord with wriggling legs returning from a too long stretch. Only then did Lincoln realize that the blow had knocked him clear of Delilah. She was crouched on the carpet, coughing from the smoke, her pink sweatshirt blackened and frayed, staring at Agnetha. Billy stepped between them, red flames rising up from him, his clothes blackening to ash and falling away, revealing skin shimmering with heat. He let out a husky roar straight from the depths of hell. He spread his hands wide, and he stepped toward Agnetha. She backed away in shock, toward the ragged hole in the wall that was once a window. Whatever she thought she'd find in this room, she hadn't anticipated a man that burned like napalm. Delilah stood. You better run, you dumb skank. My daddy is almost home. The distant crack of a rifle. Blood-red fire spurted from Billy's shoulder. He fell away, hand gripping the wound, more blood-red flame tongue spurting between his already blazing fingers. A sniper. Lincoln should have known a sniper might be out there. Hooked pincers the size of scimitars punched up through the floor around Delilah, 6 of them, then pulled down hard, tearing the floor away. Delilah dropped through, gone from sight in an instant, gray smoke billowing up through the hole. Lincoln ran to the hole and dove through, into the smoke. He flared his cloak as he landed, heard Delilah scream, felt huge pincers clamp around his chest armor. He twisted and slashed, cutting through something that splashed wetness on his face. Another something clamped down on his leg so hard his armor dented into his thigh. The haze of Cimarril adjusted to the smoke, let him see through it. A thick beetle the size of a beer keg had locked scimitar pincers on his leg. He reversed his grip on Tizona and plunged it down through the monster's bug carapace, then twisted the blade and ripped outward, slicing an arm-sized gash that sent viscous pink fluid flying. The smoke thinned almost instantly, flowing out through a huge hole in the wall. Delilah's room was on the third floor. They had cut a hole in the wall one floor below. Lincoln again heard Delilah scream, but this time it was far away, too distant to be in the room with him. His heart dropped. Lincoln ran to the hole in the wall and looked out to see the clandestine carpet some 50 yards away. On it were Agnetha, her yellow and purple centipede arm wrapped around Delilah Droman, Haimana in a red kimono, and Teddy Two Fingers, who held the unmistakable shape of a bullpup Walther WA-2000 sniper rifle. Teddy raised two fingers to his head in a mock salute. Then the carpet whizzed away into the night, high above the roofs of Barron Ridge's multi-million dollar mansions. Lincoln dropped to Zona, reached into his cloak for his crossbow. As fast as he was, by the time he drew it out, the carpet was gone. He felt sick. He'd lost her. He'd lost Delilah. And Billy. Billy. Lincoln leapt up through the hole in the ceiling.
You have been listening to Slay, created by Scott Sigler and Rob Otto. Performed by Scott Sigler. Copyright 2024, Empty Set Entertainment. For more info on Scott Sigler, his novels, short stories, and podcasts, visit scottsigler.com. Theme music is the song They're Watching Me by the band Super Weapon.
Have you ever watched a futuristic sci-fi movie and wondered, but wait, could any of this really happen? And will I live long enough to see it? That's what our show Hypothetical is about. I'm Carrie Bechet, and on this podcast, we ask what-if questions about the future. Like, what if we could read minds? What if the world's digital data was erased all at once? What would happen if the Yellowstone supervolcano erupted? Then we explore that question two ways, through speculative science fiction and through dialogue with brilliant scientists. The result is a genre-bending narrative that's interwoven with real facts provided by literal geniuses. And spoiler alert, a lot of the science fiction out there, it's not nearly as far-fetched as you might think. Come time travel with me into the future on Hypothetical. New episodes on Tuesdays, available on all your favorite podcast apps. Just search Hypothetical. That's HYPERTHETICAL.